Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Let's go back to 2011 and look at the World Cup with Squidge. Let's go back to 2011 and look at the World Cup with Squidge.
The Squidge Rugby World Cup Retrospective Podcast, welcome to.
I was expecting you to say that it's sponsored by something today. I had half a second of hope that you'd gained a sponsorship deal from somewhere and not told me about it because you want to keep all the royalties yourself or something like that, you know?
We did really, really last minute, so I didn't get time to write like an Adam Buxton style song, which is what I was hoping to do. I was hoping to write a jingle. But instead, we're now sponsored by Squarespace.
Don't know if you've heard of them. Okay. They sound good.
But if you want to build a quality website, then you should head to Squarespace. Huh. And there you can make a beautiful website simply. Oh. And you should use the offer code Buxton.
Yeah, that's good. That was offered to us.
Personally to us.
Because of the Buxton water, where we got that name from. I can't think of a rugby player called Buxton.
Oh, no. Okay.
I tried my best.
I'm sure there was one. I'm sure there was one.
I'm going to look this up now. Buxton rugby. Oh, wait. There's a place called Buxton.
You'll get the
RFC.
Town, Buxton. Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
I can't find a place.
Not where I used to work there. Mind. Well, not work there. I did a few shifts there. I'm sure there is one. I'm sure there's a rugby player called Buxton.
Yeah,
please
I'm
don't
sure
write in because we will have come to us in the night. Mm. This is the Squidge Rugby World Cup Retrospective Podcast. Peter Buxton played for Gloucester.
Peter Buxton. Was he a fly half?
Yes.
Okay.
He was a flanker.
Oh, flanker. Oh, yeah, I remember him. I was thinking Gloucester, but...
Played for Gloucester until about 2013-14.
Right. For some reason, I thought it was an Australian fly half when you said his name, but clearly I've got somebody else stuck in my head. I can picture him in a Western Force t-shirt, but
John
I also can't
John Buxton.
Picture him. Okay, I don't know
who was also a flanker.
Right.
Won two caps for the All Blacks in the 50s.
Okay, fair play. Well done, John Buxton.
Well done, John Buxton.
Yeah, thank you for help for being sponsored by Squarespace. Look... All I'm saying is don't actually buy anything.
I don't
use Squarespace until they actually sponsor us.
No, I want to say especially congratulations to John Buxton on being sponsored by Squarespace, considering he died in 2007. Look, they're honouring his legacy.
Yeah,
if nothing else.
But still, don't buy from Squarespace. Don't use their don't make a website with them. Unless,
but now they definitely won't sponsor us.
Unless they sponsor us. If they sponsor us, then definitely use their
services. How does it feel on your end to be one of the four podcasts not sponsored by Squarespace?
What do you mean on your end?
No, because there's two of us here.
Yeah.
I know how I feel.
Oh,
how do you feel?
That's entirely fair. You don't have to ask how you feel, do you? I might ask later how you feel, though, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I feel a bit neglected by them, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah. To be honest, I'm just really sad that we don't get to open this podcast by talking about who we're sponsored by. I know that there are adverts probably at the start of this, in the middle of this, and end of this. But, I'd like to talk about that myself. If there's anybody who is interested in potential... I don't know. I'm going to pick out a random product out of a hat and say men's grooming products, right? If there's anybody to do with that or any company in the world that wants to sponsor us.
Okay. I want to say my dream sponsorship is I can't believe it's not butter.
Why?
I just think they're great lads.
Fair.
And I think it'd be good if we could go, can't believe it's not butter, more like Tommy Boater.
That's a good
Backy's
one.
Boater. Backy's, I can't believe it's not Backy's Boater.
Now, I tell you what. That's free advertisement you've just given them.
Because
everybody who's heard this podcast has now just purchased Can't Believe It's Not Butter.
Yeah, they were Cate Blanchett with the headphones over the ears, took them into Asda or the closest supermarket and forced them to purchase I Can't Believe It's Not Butter or I Can't Believe It's Not Butter Light.
I'll tell you what, right, this is going to blow people's minds even more. it basically is butter.
But it's not. Like, you can't believe it's not butter.
Like, I can't. Like, I couldn't believe it when they first told me that it's not actually butter.
I mean, my earliest memory is to do if I can't believe it's not butter.
Really?
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Are you not familiar with the story?
I don't. No. I don't know.
I think it says a lot about me, actually. It's kind of, it's a very apocryphal first memory. But it was whilst our mother, who is the same, my mother is also the same person.
Shout out.
Yeah. And she was in hospital getting ready to drop a sick new son.
Oh, cool.
By which I mean you.
Best one yet.
But it was sick in every sense of the word, because you're just disgusting. But no, whilst she was in hospital, well, she'd gone into labour with you. I was left with our grandmother, you know, yeah. And we were watching what I believe was Last of Summer Wine.
Okay.
Just because I remember we used to watch a lot of Last of Summer Wine whenever I was left with just her. And they were doing a bit on it where the bit was, they first took in I Can't Believe It's Not Butter to the supermarket checkout. And then they kept bringing in other products. I can't believe it's not bread. I can't believe it's not beef. I can't believe it's not crisps. Right. I can't believe it's not whatever. And they kept going through and getting louder and louder laughs. And I remember, and I was about 18 months old at this point, that I remember deconstructing the joke in my brain and going, oh, it's funny because the first item is real and the others aren't. So that's why that's a joke.
Right. And that's why...
That is my earliest memory. I was about 18 months old.
The only funny jokes you've ever made since then have been about, I can't believe it's not butter.
Yeah, it was that one.
Like, there was that really funny moment when I came home and you saw me for the first time and you said, oh, I can't believe it is brother.
Yes, that was really good.
Yeah.
All the time I saw some butter and I said, in a sarcastic tone of voice, I can't believe that's not butter.
Right.
But it was butter, which is why it was funny.
Man, look, if you've tuned into this podcast thinking it's going to be something good, just write in, I can't believe it's not Buxton.
Yes, thank you. Okay, so we should briefly mention the rugby that we're supposed to talk about, which is Ireland's 36-6 win over Italy from the 2011 Rugby World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
This was the final game of the pool stage, not just for Ireland and Italy, but overall.
Yeah.
These two teams had met in the Six Nations earlier that year, where Ireland won 13-11 in Rome in Stadio Flaminio, one of the last games they played there. Maybe the last game they played there, actually.
Oh.
Brian O'Driscoll scored the only try for Ireland, and then Luke McLean popped up in the last 5 minutes and made it really tense, but conversion was missed, they didn't draw.
Yes. So, I mean, the thing is, this was billed before the game. Like, Nick Mullins was on the commentary and was saying, like, oh, this is a really big encounter. And he sort of billed it beforehand as, like, this is Ireland versus Italy for a spot for the quarterfinals. We all knew Ireland were going to win and Italy were going to finish third. But I did like the dramatisation of it. And, I mean, that sounds very demeaning to Italy because, you know, I was, you know, we did a preview for the third round of the Six Nations where we said Italy could beat Ireland, maybe. So, you know, I don't want to sound too down on Italy. But I think just with the team Ireland fielded, we felt very confident that they were going to progress into the quarterfinals. And hey, who knows what could happen to Ireland in the quarterfinals?
anything could happen. You know, their results are so varied in quarterfinals.
Yeah.
Do you want a comparison of the two teams from the Six Nations against the two teams that played this week?
Go on.
Or, as it were, in the World Cup?
Go on.
So the Irish back three in the World Cup was Rob Kearney, Tommy Bowe, Keith Earls.
Yeah, okay. Back three.
Their first choice, you know, the best they could put out.
Yeah.
In the Six Nations, Keith Earls remained, but on the wing was Fergus McFadden,
okay.
And at fullback, Luke Fitzgerald.
Oh, yeah, this was the year where they experimented with Fitzgerald at fullback.
And then
didn't take him to the World Cup.
Yeah.
And they actually chose not to take him, didn't they?
Yeah, he was dropped, he was left out.
Yeah.
Because there was talk of them just starting Gavin Duffy at fullback, but they ended up going with McFadden.
Yeah, I can remember during this World Cup, Leinster were playing Fitzgerald at 12.
Yeah.
And it was a weird sort of selection, but he's one of those players who's played anywhere from, you know, wing, centre and fullback. But it seemed really strange because they were using him as like a big crash ball option while all the big boys were missing. And it felt really weird.
He came through as a really pacey 13.
Yeah.
And then he adapted his say into a big 12 so he could play alongside O'Driscoll. And he played on the wing as well. I remember the first time I saw him play on the wing was during the international period for against the Scarlets. And then he kind of got into the Ireland team as a winger and played a bit at 13. Because obviously you had this guy called Brian O'Driscoll who was keeping him out.
Yeah, that guy. nerd.
Yeah, but they had O'Driscoll and Darcy in the centres, and it then becomes sort of, you know, less interesting. But the team is significantly, significantly stronger in the World Cup, you know? Like, there's a lot of players missing in the Six Nations by the end of that campaign, whereas they have their full strength. That is what you would picture as the first-round Irish team from this era there.
The only the contentious thing about Murray and O'Gara starting as the halfbacks over Sexton and Redding. So Redding started against Australia in that win. Mm. And then the thing is, I still just thought this was them blooding Murray. So it's sort of like, this is a game where it would be a tough task for a young Conor Murray at this point. You know, he was very much still new to international rugby. But, you know, it's enough that we'll be able to win with him and he'll have that experience of winning in the starting jersey. But no, that was just them going, this is our starting halfback combination, you know.
Yeah.
That O'Gara's the man that they were willing to pick. And to be fair, I think O'Gara had a very good game here.
Yeah, I do. I agree. And I think Murray did.
Yeah, he did.
You know, I think Murray... There's a point in which Nick Mullins on commentary says that thing that used to be said of him and Mike Phillips a lot, which is they're like a ninth forward.
Yeah.
You know, like an extra forward. Because it was such a novelty to see a number eight, or a number nine, rather, who was big and who could pick up and carry a bit.
Yeah.
And he did cause a level of chaos there.
Yeah.
In that way that you kind of forget.
Yeah.
You forget because Colin Murray has become such a standard issue nine, you know, that the thing that stands out about him is his kicking rather than anything else.
Yeah.
And his experience, I guess, now, which very much couldn't be the case then. But then it was his size and it was the fact that he would pop up and he'd make these big carries. And there's a point at which they used him to kind of batter it up off a line out where he throws a little dummy and goes straight into the 10.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting to look back on it, the way he hasn't evolved his game so much as the game's evolved around him and he's had to change with it.
Sure.
And I think it's why he had that dip in form right before he became the best scrum half in the world around 2017-16-ish. He had a sort of dip around 2015 where I think the game caught up with him and he then had to adapt with it.
I don't think, because Conor Murray used to do this thing where whenever he was within 5 metres of the try line, he'd always dummy and go himself because he really wanted to rack up his international tries, clearly. And he, like, sometimes it would come off. Like, I remember he scored a try against the All Blacks where he went for it. He had one or two against Wales. Didn't he have one where he's... Oh, no. Yeah, there was one he scored for the Lions, which is actually the right call because everybody faded off him. But he used to have this habit of just going for the line just on weird and necessary. Yeah. Like, Gareth Davis does it all the time still.
Yeah.
But I think Conor Murray's had that completely beaten out of his game that he's much more likely to just feed it to... And like, both him and Jameson Gibson-Parker are great at this. Just really like getting the best out of their pack. And Ireland are particularly good for sort of that old thing of bringing forwards around the corner.
Yes.
Which used to be good as just a thing of just like, oh yeah, here's forwards running onto the ball. When now we've just realised, no, just get forwards, get them to run and pass them the ball.
No, but England started doing it again.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Like, Ireland bring people around the corner to sort of surprise the defence and get them into the defender's eye line quite late.
Yeah.
And it's a really effective strategy because obviously they're all planning for what's going to happen. They've trained with this a billion times. Whereas the opposition have to like adapt on the fly and make big tackles and they're often conceding yards. And it was really effective against Italy last week, actually. I know that we're talking about the wrong game here, but yeah.
We're talking about three different Ireland-Italy games.
Yeah, it's confusing, isn't it?
As I say, England have started doing it a lot off line-up ball with under Aymor these last sort of year or so.
Yeah.
England are doing it more and more, and that Anthony Watson try comes from doing it repeatedly from against Wales.
Oh, of course. Yeah, no, that's a really good example, actually. Carl Sinclair's like one of the perfect forwards for that job because like he's so good on the ball and like his groundwork's always spot on.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the most underrated part of Sinclair's game, that you never really see him screwing up the groundwork.
No. They also, and it's this is a weird thing, because I do think, we said this off air, but I think Tom Curry's had two of his worst games in the England shirt, the Six Nations. But they keep using him as this kind of dummy runner in that position.
Sure.
And he's really effective at it, because he's got a turn of pace, but he is a big carrier.
Yeah.
And he's really good at picking a dummy line coming round the corner, which is such a specific skill.
Yeah.
But he does it excellently, and he does it again twice in the lead up to the Watson try, where he's just there in the eye line.
Yeah.
And you do turn and look at him, you know, you go, hey, look, it's Tom Curry.
Yeah, of course, because you've still got to defend him, haven't you? Because as you say, he's a big unit. If you don't stack up a few defenders against him, he's going to carry hard. So it's easy to forget like why Tom Curry was so good and got into the England team in the first place when he has a couple of bad games. But he does do stuff like that really effective still.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I haven't forgotten why he got into the England team in the first place.
Sure.
Because he's still incredibly good, even though, like I said, the game against Scotland was the worst I've ever seen him play by some distance. I thought he was terrible, actively bad. But the Italy team, to touch on those as well, pretty much again had their strongest team out. No Luke McLean, who's dropped out.
Yeah. According to ESPN Scrum, Luke McLean came on at number 8, but I don't recall that.
Huh. Yeah, he's listed at number 8.
Coming on. Yeah. I don't remember Parise going off, so.
Well, maybe Parise moved to 10 and he came on for him.
True. That probably did happen, to be honest. They probably, yeah, moved Parise to 10 instead of bringing on Richard Blowjob, Riccardo Bacchino. But no, it's a good Italy team. I mean, Andrea Marzi at fullback over McLean is obviously, it's pretty much a toss-up at this point, that selection between those two. They've both had pretty good World Cups thus far. Benvenuti's had a few standout performances. Well, the one against Russia in particular, and he was good against the USA, who was unlucky enough to finish a couple of tries.
Rather than 13.
Bergamasco, I suppose, is the goal kicker, so I guess, you know, he's somewhat justified.
They then go with the all-Gonzalo midfield.
Yes, Canale and Garcia.
Not so speedy Gonzalos.
Nice. That was a good joke, man. Like, you should branch out from there. I can't believe it's not butter thing.
I was going to say, it's not so, I can't believe it's not butter, Gonzalos. I
can't believe it is banter.
Whereas, if you compare this to the team that played in the Six Nations, they had Chris Burton.
Oh, Christ. Oh, yeah, wasn't
Chris
it like...
Chris Burton started.
Wasn't it like a controversial thing that Chris Burton wasn't picked for this World Cup?
Yeah, because he signed for the Dragons and was dropped.
Yeah.
And he then ended up playing for the Dragons during the World Cup period. And that was the moment everyone went, wait a second, is he shit?
Yeah. And like, it was one of those things where we'd convinced ourselves that he was decent.
It was bizarre, wasn't it? It was like a weird collective delusion that Chris Burton was good.
There's so many players I look back on now that played internationally like 10 years ago. And I think like, oh my God, I rated them. They were like, they were shit the whole time.
Yeah. And especially, you know... It's not even like an ant finger thing where we look back 10 years on and we go, oh, actually, he wasn't that effective. But
sure.
I was watching a different part of the game, or I wasn't watching closely, or judging by a different standard.
Yeah.
Chris Burton was always bad, I think.
I think
but
so.
But we just, for some reason, a load of us, not everyone, but a lot of people went, actually, really solid signing, actually, really shrewd signing by the Dragons here. Actually, you know, because he kicked the ball, you know?
Sure.
Because he had a solid kicking game.
Yeah.
But nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah, what a weird player, man, Chris Burton. That's a strange thought. Like, even we're doing a podcast on the 2011 World Cup and Chris Burton feels ancient.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. He felt like he should be gone well before this World Cup.
Yeah. So, quickly to just finish touching on the two teams. I mean, as you say, the Irish pack is huge. The back row of Ferris, O'Brien and Heaslip is such a huge back row. And Ghirardini and Castro in the front row for Italy, alongside Salvatore Perugini playing his last game for the Azzurri.
Yeah, who then had to move his side of the scrum as well.
Yeah, which is...
Had to have a really tricky game where he had to move from
that
loose
was,
to
that
tight head after
really,
Castro goes off injured.
Really tough game for him because obviously Lechichiro comes on and just first scrum, Mike Ross just completely eats him alive. Bless him.
Yeah. But the scrum was back and forth at first.
Yeah.
And it wasn't level. It was one scrum was completely on top of the other and destroying them. And it alternated by scrum.
Sure.
And it wasn't even who had the put in. It was whoever got eaten last, then ate.
Yeah.
Because they were hungry now.
But for me, that
then
felt
then Castro
like...
goes off injured.
Yeah.
And Perugini moves to tight head. And it becomes Italy have one or two scrums where they're on top.
That was like
otherwise
half
it's...
an hour into the game. And that scrum just felt like the point where it's just like, Ireland are going to win this game. Because it was like 6-6 at that point, and it just felt like if Italy can't at least get some kind of a foothold in the scrum. If Ireland are just going to completely dominate them, then that's going to be it. That's going to be the way the game goes.
Because it was that era of Italy where they had a massive pack and their backs weren't of much use.
Yeah.
But at the time, you start to say, oh, you know, they've got two good players in Marcy and Benvenuti coming through.
Yeah.
It wasn't like nowadays where you go, actually, they've got a full generation of really good talented backs coming through, you know?
And also, like, you're saying about that their pack, like, they didn't have many players who could be trusted sort of in the loose, ball in hand.
No.
Like, they had some really nice patterns that they'd play off 10, and there was a few nice things where sort of they play out the back with Marcy as, like, a second distributor. But frankly, like, you need your forwards to be able to distribute as well, and Parise was really the only one who was actually good at it.
There's one point where they play two phases and they work an overlap and they have, in that very modern day fashion, they have a lock stood in as kind of the outside of a pod.
Sure.
And he looks to swivel, it's Quoten Hayes. Quoten Golden Hayes.
Yeah.
Who looks to swivel and give the pass, but he just drops it on the floor in front of him.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's
like
a properly
couple of minutes
pathetic
into the game,
pass.
Isn't it? Yeah,
it's really sad.
Well, Cuera gives this really lovely, like, out of the back, you know, this delicious offload to him. And Gelden Hayes is just eyeing up the winger like, Benvenuti, like, you get ready. I'm about to send you to the try line. And then he just basically drops it in front of him. And it goes about 3 metres along the floor forward.
It's funny and sad.
Yeah,
it is. You know, it's like, it's the kind of pass that would do well at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
Yeah. And like, bear in mind, like, Gelden Hayes has had some really nice touches in this World Cup.
Mm.
There's been a couple where he hasn't passed it, but like, he set up that Parise try against the USA, and he is a good player, ball in hand usually.
Yeah, yeah.
And stuff like that. And like, there's one where Castro gets it, and they're playing a little shape off 10, and the idea is that they're going to play out the back with Marzi and spread it wide to Benvenuti. And again, like, Castro has the spin as he takes it, and he's got all the time in the world to deliver a good pass, and he just doesn't. It's just a really poor pass that he gives, and Marzi drops it, and then Ireland get a load of pressure on the scrum. And I believe that's not long before Tommy Bowe, in theory, scores a try.
Yes.
Where Sean O'Brien just carries into the heart of the Italian defence and takes about three people with him and somehow manages to free an offload to Tommy Bowe, who juggles the ball a bit and runs it in under the posts. What was your opinion on this?
I think that's a try. I think that's fine.
Yeah.
Basically, what happens is the offload goes backwards, but Bowe has to bat the ball forward to recover it because he's coming at such pace.
The camera angle does make it look like it goes forward, but it also goes backwards.
I think that pass goes backwards and Bowe knocks it forward but regathers it before it hits anyone else on the ground.
Agreed. And I don't think he... Because it's a real grey area about batting it over people's heads and stuff, but I don't think he gained an advantage by the way he knocked it forward.
No, I think he's trying to catch it, but because he's coming at such pace and he's got such a small window to try and catch the ball, he doesn't have time to put his hands up.
My point is,
you know,
I don't think
he
like
bat it
past
and
anybody
it.
Or anything. Like,
No.
Because I think that it is a grey area, and I think that if somebody gains an advantage by tapping it over somebody's head or whatever, then that's probably a knock-on. But I don't think Bowe does. I think it is a clean try.
I think that's fine.
The other thing I want to ask your opinion on is what's your opinion on being one of the four podcasts that isn't sponsored by Squarespace?
Well, I think it's actually a fantastic opportunity.
Okay.
Because just 2 weeks ago, I launched my own competitive service to build beautiful websites called Triangle Space.
Okay.
And now Triangle Space is aimed at people who want to build a website entirely using a basic instrument that you would use as a child to you know, play songs such as Twinkle Twinkle Little Star.
Tune.
Isn't it? Isn't it a banger?
Yeah.
Have you heard David Guetta's remix of it?
Oh, so bad.
I'm ashamed of how much I enjoy that. It's really, a website where you just tap a note on a triangle and it turns it into a website for you. It's so intuitive. It's so simple. Anyone could do it, even a child, in the way Squarespace claim, but are wrong. And for that, I will be taking them to court and using all the money I make from going to court with my 28 lawyers to try and get Triangle Space properly off the ground.
Okay, well, good luck to you. And I'm pretty we've just gained 12 lawyers.
Yes. We've got lawyers all the time. We've got lawyers coming up our...
That's true. You know, like, because lawyers, like, a few of them quit in the last week or so, and we always have people...
They all know each other, you know? Exactly. We've got so many lawyers know each other, you know? They're just going like, oh, do you want to come and join
the... I don't know if you knew this, but this podcast is massive. Like, everyone listens to it. Like, it's so good. Like, it's really, really good podcast. Yeah, I really...
Hence why Squarespace sponsors us.
Yeah, I listen to it all the time as well.
Do you?
Yeah, I listen to it loads.
Okay.
Anyway,
like rugby?
So, yeah, Tommy Bowe scores a non-try. Oh, yeah, it's worth... I forgot to mention, that try was disallowed.
That try was disallowed.
Yeah, yeah, it was given as a knock-on when, frankly, it probably should have been.
But,
I mean,
right,
I've written here,
this is
totally
an interesting,
should have been a try.
Interesting thing, because the TMO was not allowed to step in, because at the time, the TMO could only comment on things that happened in the act of scoring or over the try line, right?
Yeah.
So, that meant he couldn't check that forward pass, so the referee had to go with a gut decision on whether or not it was forward. And it got me thinking in the fact that, you know, people often say the TMO kills games. That game was played nowadays, that try is given.
Yeah. I agree.
Whereas it's not then. Yeah.
Like,
because
the thing with
the referee had to take a guess.
The controversial Liam Williams try for him a couple of weeks ago with the re-examined so-called knock-on. I think 10 years ago, the referee would have just straight up called that as a knock-on. Whereas having the benefit of saying on-field try to a TMO, who can then overrule you, means that referees have more of a tendency to say play on. And we saw it exactly. In the oh my God, I'm going to confuse everybody here. But the Ireland-Italy game in the 2021 Six Nations, there was that point where James Lowe did a very clearly forward pass to Kelleher.
Yes,
and they kept playing and they nearly scored. Yeah. And it waited until the TMO was going to come in because you assumed that Kelleher was going to slide over and the referee would go, TMO, is it a try? Yes? No? Mm. And instead Kelleher gets tackled, Ireland gets to play on for a bit. And then eventually, like a minute later, the touch is just like, hey, you know that knock-on that there was a minute ago? Fancy calling that back?
But I think it allows for a better and more open game.
I agree.
Rather than the referee calling stuff up immediately.
Agreed.
You know, you get a chance to see advantage and you get a chance to see how things would play
for
out.
Sure, I agree.
In a different way.
Yeah, and I would like to see that Tommy Bowe try given, you know?
Yeah. Part of the problem is the thing Bowden Barrett tweeted about the other day, that, you know, too often water boys come on in between breaks, as England are well aware. Or, you know, he was saying that there's a stoppage at seemingly every single scrum in every line-out.
Yeah.
When he was watching the pro. I don't know if you saw Bowden Barrett's tweet.
No.
That he tweeted he was watching a Premiership game. I think it was the Bath game from the weekend.
Right.
And he was complaining it was a midnight kickoff in Japan. Hmm. I did check this to see if Bowden Barrett's just... his sleep patterns has ruined his mind.
Maybe he's just a big fan of Rhys Priestland.
He is a massive fan of Rhys Priestland. He's kicking records as well. Four. So, Bowden Barrett, yeah, tweeted that he said there's too many stoppages, you know, play stops are too long between scrums and lineouts in Northern Hemisphere, which I agree with.
Yeah.
And it's the thing that really struck me in Super Rugby Aotearoa is how short those gaps are, you know, and it feels like the pace of the game is so much more intense and so much quicker, even though what's actually happening in between the stoppages isn't necessarily much higher quality than, you know, than a Champions Cup game. Sure. It's a similar standard. But because play happens so quickly, because teams aren't stopping for anything more than a couple of seconds between scrum and lineout, you know, they get in position to set and then they do it, it feels more intense.
Yeah.
It feels closer to international standard.
Yeah. No, that is interesting as well. And, like, I mean, I suppose the longer stoppages mean defences can get a bit sharper as well.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, that they're a bit more tuned in. So, no, that's an interesting argument. I'm not quite sure where I stand on that. I mean, I think that... the thing is, right, if coaches see an opportunity of give ourselves a longer rest period when we don't have the ball, then I get it.
Yeah.
Use that up.
Yeah, yeah.
And Bowden Barrett will know that very well, of course. So, yeah, no, that's a funny one. But I suppose objectively for the good of the game and the good of, you know, attacking rugby, I suppose, it's better to have shorter breaks.
We've also seen in both weekends, Paul Williams in particular... really saying, you know, let's go at every scrum, you know, really trying to press people as the referee, Paul Williams.
Yes, not the Samoan fullback or the writer.
Or the journalist, yeah. But the referee, Paul Williams, really at every scrum shouting, let's go, let's be there quicker, you know, really pushing those standards, which is what it would require, you know.
Yeah.
It would take referees doing it. It's also interesting that it's Bowden Barrett that said that, because Barrett is the kind of player who suits the game being at a million miles an hour.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Because it leads to things like the Cody Taylor try from week one would not be scored in the Northern Hemisphere because defences are well drilled enough that they're always watching for that ball.
Yes.
Whereas it's quite novel in the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah, of course.
And it wouldn't be at international level because you're used to playing against all different styles and, you know, types of play. But that try would not have been scored in the Champions Cup, whereas it is scored in Super Rugby.
Yeah.
And that's not to say, you know, a forward probably couldn't finish it in the same way. You know, most hookers in the Champions Cup couldn't finish it in the way Cody Taylor could, though obviously Ken Owens would absolutely do
it. No, he definitely
he's got more pace than an actual bird. But I think it's interesting. I think it's an interesting distinction there.
Yeah.
But on the TMO point, right? Because the TMO couldn't step in at this point in 2011, it leads to a few moments like that. So the Tommy Bowe try that is allowed, and a few minutes into the game, about 10 minutes into the game, Leonardo Gherardini just straight up gouges Kian Healy.
Wait,
sticks
what?
A
I
finger
missed
in his eye. Yeah, yeah. It happened, and they play a replay of it, and the commentator kind of goes, hold on a second, that's a gouge!
And I then, totally missed that.
The TMO can't step in to point out foul play.
Wow.
So he just plays on. Like, it's a proper finger in the eye wriggling about. There's two replays of it, and Italy get the penalty because Healy was offside
or
something.
That's mental.
But he properly, like, it's a straight red card. It's like a, should have been like a 30-week ban. It's
Jesus
pretty
Christ.
Disgusting behaviour. He doesn't only get away with it, Italy get the penalty.
That's disgusting, man.
Yeah.
Has Gherardini done something like that before? Because I have this weird feeling he's done something really
I mean,
sketchy.
He held up Castro when he was trying to cross the line.
That's true. So he has got a Dick of the Day nomination on him before. So I suppose that's That's worse than any ban that you could possibly be given.
Well, yeah.
Our DJ okay, Khaled.
Yeah, but yeah, he completely gets away with that. So it kind of, in the way, I'll always root for the underdog, but you are a little bit glad the Ireland win when one of the opposition players gets away with a gouge that's caught up by, you know, caught by the cameras.
Yeah. I mean, that's a funny one about, you know, cheering for the underdog, because I think at the time when this was live, I was probably cheering for Italy because, you know, underdog. But watching this, I was just kind of like, I was so bored by watching Italy, which is really annoying because in the games against the USA and Russia, they've been really entertaining. And then suddenly this game against Ireland, they just kind of, it's an annoying cliche and I hate it, but it feels like they kind of went into their shells a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously, as I found out over the course of the Six Nations, I'm massively biased against Ireland. And I really desperately hate them, as I keep being told over and over again. So obviously I cheer for Italy.
Yeah.
But I completely get what you mean, that Ireland are trying to do more.
Yeah.
And it's still, this Italy team
just don't play that well in this game.
No. It's an Ireland team with Ronan O'Gara at 10, you know? And they're still playing considerably far, far more rugby than Italy are.
I mean, the whole first half is basically O'Gara just pinning them in the corner. And Italy do try and stay in the game. You know, that it's sort of 9-6 at half-time, isn't it, to Ireland? So Italy do stay in the game fairly well, but O'Gara is just completely just making sure he puts a foot on the throat and just says, like, no, if you want to play a kicking game with us, then we're going to win this.
Italy play exactly the way they did under Nick Mallett. You know, it's kind of the image of it.
Yeah.
In that they really front up, they're tough up front, you know, their pack are, if not dominant, they're always competitive.
Yeah.
They're really annoying. Their backs are not up to much, but all of them like to boot the ball. So you will spend some time in your own half, you know, unless you've got an O'Gara or a Dan Parks type figure who can pin them back. There's an interesting thing as well that Alan Quinlan points out in commentary. He says, it's really interesting. Italy always exit through a box kick. You know, they always hang a box kick to exit. And you're like, hold on, that was an interesting point.
Yeah.
Because nowadays, that's just what all teams do.
Yeah.
But at that time, it was novel that a team would hang a box kick and have their wingers chase and be able to put pressure on it.
Yeah.
Whereas then, you know, now it just seems like a good idea, an obvious idea, because you have to compete and get a chase up. But then it was fascinating. At one point, Semenzato puts one out on the full, and I put in my notes, Semenzato more like.
Nice. That was the kick. Nice. That was the kick where Nick Mullins, again, after Miles Harrison did it in the previous one, but Nick Mullins compared Semenzato to Troncon. And he said, yeah, they finally found the replacement for Troncon, some people are saying. And do you want to know how well that aged? Semenzato played one more campaign after this. He played four games in the following Six Nations and never played for Italy again.
It's a shame, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it was
I don't want to curse Stephen Varney. I really like Stephen Varney.
But Stephen Varney's also 19. He's 19, you know, he's got time.
And he's so
good. Semenzato slowly built, and he had 1 year where he was really good for Italy.
Yeah.
And it's easy to overlook it, but he was really good for Italy.
Yeah, he was. Year. But Varney's so good and so young, so fingers crossed he's...
Varney's actually building.
Yeah.
You know? And it's not like Callum Braley, who came through, looked solid.
Yeah.
And I kind of think Callum Braley's very close to his ceiling.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't think Varney's anywhere near his.
No, I agree. Varney's got a long way to go, and I mean that in the most positive way possible.
Yeah. Varney's already considerably better than Braley, as we saw in that last game.
Agreed, yeah.
And Braley's a perfectly solid player.
I prefer him to Vialli as well.
Whereas I think, if you take the ceiling of like how good they could possibly be, right?
Yeah.
Braley is currently, I reckon, like 86, 87% as good as he could possibly be. Whereas I think Varney is probably like 65%.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no, I think Varney's got so much development left in him. Like, him and Garbisi is such a promising, exciting pairing.
And not to stay on the Garbisi hype train, right? But I reckon Garbisi's about 50% of where he could be. Yeah, I reckon Garbisi has been the best 10 of the Six Nations so far. And
yeah,
I think he's only about halfway to the player he could be.
Yeah, the thing is, right, I think of Garbisi, and the first thing I think of is the insane dummies, the side steps, the incredible passes. These are the skills that we saw Beauden Barrett doing when he was aged like 21, 22 or whatever. Mm. Or players like that, not to just immediately say he's the next Beauden Barrett or whatever. But frankly, that's not even the best part of Garbisi's game. It's the way he reads like three or four phases time. And like so few young tens have that as just an immediate part of their language, as just, right, this pod of forwards will crash it up, and then the next phase, this is when the action happens. And the way that he can communicate with his back line, with his centres and wingers, that's what's going to happen. And like his patience with when his team have the ball is just outstanding.
Yeah.
If he improves his kicking game, he is going to become such a force in the tens of world rugby.
This is it. His kicking game is the problem at the minute, because he just kind of hoofs it wildly rather than actually aiming anywhere.
Yeah.
And it's something he can work on. And you need a coach who understands kicking to come in at Benetton to help him with it. But if he works on that, he is going to be properly special. He will be properly special anyway, you know.
Yeah.
And it was when he first played for Italy in his first couple of games. They're bringing him through so early because he's a once-in-a-generation talent for Italy. I increasingly think he's just a once-in-a-generation talent.
Yeah, no, I agree. And this is just proof that no matter what, if you put the two of us in the same Zoom call, it will turn into a Paolo Garbisi hype train.
Yeah, that's all I want to talk about, you know. All I want to talk about is Paolo Garbisi. He's genuinely probably my favourite player at the minute.
Yeah, no, I agree. I love him. He's so good, so good.
Yeah.
So, let's go back to Ireland, Italy of 2011, why don't we?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So, as I say, Ireland are leading 9-6 going into halftime. And Italy have a promising maul in the Irish 22, which is hurtling towards the Irish try line. They're given a penalty advantage, and you think, okay, well, if they don't score here, they'll kick it through the posts and they'll go in 9-all. Sounds good, right?
Yeah.
9-all, not bad. You know, you can kick off right in the second half. Right. And then Mauro Bergamasco just decides, you know what? I've got better ideas. And he just turns around and punches Kieran Healy in the face.
And gets
the penalty reversed, and I'll just obviously kick it out and take half time. But why would you do it? It's a proper, like, near bordering on Valmahina moment. Like, your team is about to score 3, if not 5, if not 7 points. Like, let's just. And all Healy was doing was he was lingering in offside position. It's not like he pushed him. It didn't look like he'd said anything to him. It looks like he was stood in an offside position, which was inconveniencing Bergamasco, who was already pushing around quite a lot in the mall and looked quite fired up and angry, which you should be. But not enough that you just decide to punch him.
Yeah, and it's...
He didn't get a card when you say or a anything, punch, but...
No, when you say it's like... It's a sort of connects with the bottom of his jaw.
Yeah,
you know?
It was such a shit punch, he didn't get a card.
Exactly. Like, it's one of the, it will be a yellow card, I think, nowadays, if the TMO could step in and watch it again.
Yeah. Whereas if he'd landed a good punch on him, it would have been a straight red.
Straight red, yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
But he was just that bad at punching his opposite man, which is, frankly, like, enough of a Dick of the Day nomination in itself. But
I have it written in my notes as Mauro Berg with a big dumb.
Yeah.
Which I think sums it up. Parise is fuming with him. Parise is fuming, as you would be, you know. Yeah. If you've got Ireland backpedalling right before half time, you could score a try, as you say, or at least go in level.
And it completely changes the conversation at half time. So stupid, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, you go and you've just scored, the momentum's with you. You're going, come on, lads, let's put them to the sword here. We've got this.
Yeah.
And instead, you're just going, oh, okay, never mind. It was good while it lasted. Our number 7's a bit of a dick. Like, it completely changes the mood at half time. I bet Nick Mallett was fuming.
Yeah. I said, you can see Parise is so angry with him.
Yeah.
The point in which, you know, we've seen Parise be angry with referees a lot. But
of course we have.
He, this time, is angry with Bergamasco. And he kind of has a word with him. Then he walks off just looking at him. You know, just
and that's one of the most experienced players in the team.
Yeah, I mean,
this is Mauro Bergamasco.
Yeah, he played in like the 99 World, you know, he's playing in like his fourth World Cup here.
Yeah.
You know, fourth of five.
And that's what he's done for his team. Like, it's really just bad. And, like, I hate it Like, it's just so negative. And, like, I've spoken so much about Val Mahina and, you know, what he did. But this is
Lovotti,
like,
as well, on the Italy note.
Lovotti, yeah, it's a great example, yeah.
In the 2019 World Cup. Yeah. For those who don't remember, Andrea Lovotti, Italy make a great break in the game against the Springboks. They're about to score a try that will put them level. They get right up to the line. And instead, Andrea Lovotti, the prop, just picks up one of the Springbok players and drops him on his head.
It's just complete, like, it's just spear tackle. Like, there's just no two ways about it.
It would be the dumbest thing you'd see in rugby for years if Sebastian Valmahina didn't, you know, shoulder Aaron Wayne right in the face moments, you know, a week later, I think.
But yeah, no, it's a really, really dumb play. And again, like, as you say, it's pretty hard to cheer for Italy at this point, isn't it? Coming out for the second half. So at halftime, they bring on Richard Blowjob himself.
Yes.
And at this point, you can see how much confidence the forwards have in him when Leonardo Ghirardini puts in a chip kick as the first play of the second half. So clearly he's thinking, right, we really do not trust Bocchino, so I'm going to take on the chip kick as a hooker.
Yeah. And it goes all right, you know.
Yeah, it's fine.
And maybe Ghirardini's just taking the fact that he's still on the pitch for granted. He's just going, look, I'm going to try all the shit I've always wanted to do and never got the chance.
Yeah. So not long after that, Rog kicks another penalty and Ireland go 12-6 up. And they start to build quite nicely at this point. I think they have a few really nice, like, flowing attacking sets. O'Gara misses a drop goal at one point.
Yeah.
It was actually a really good setup. They maybe gave it to him slightly too soon, but...
That as an option.
Yeah, of course. You know? Yeah, I do.
Because
it's
killing a game. It's, they played it like a big World Cup game. And for Ireland, this is the biggest game they can possibly win in the World Cup.
Yeah, well...
The final pool game.
Do you know why he went for that?
Why?
And I can tell you this objectively. So the score was 12-6. Mm. If it went over, the score would have become 15-6.
Of course it
Every tryless game in World Cup history, all the way back to about 1995 or something...
No. Yeah, it's...
Has been 15-6. That's been the final score. Every single trialist game since the 90s.
Yeah. It's not the five, it's 2003.
O'Gara knows that will put them within more than a converted try. So if Italy do score and it's no longer a trialist game, they're still 2 points up and then they can think about scoring. So it was actually a really smart option to try and turn the score into 15-6.
Yeah.
Good play by O'Gara. Good knowledge of the history of world rugby, which then carries on for, like, that's still a statistic.
To this day. I think it's 2003 to current.
Right.
Because it's infamous, it's the score of the 2007 final.
Yes. And, like, there was Scotland-Georgia from early this tournament. There was the Wales-Australia game 2015.
Ireland's win over Australia in this tournament.
Yes, of course. It was also 15-6.
Yeah.
It's the most bizarre stat.
Yeah, like, we still haven't had that broken. No. And I really hope 2023 gets through it, you know. I hope we have one 15-6 game or something.
Yeah.
Just to keep that running with no other trialist matches.
That'd be great. But... in the end, they decide that they can give this up because Brian O'Driscoll scores a try from, like, Tommy Bowman. How good is he?
Really good. Really good.
He's so good. Like,
at anything. You know,
a brilliant run by him where he gets on the outside of two forwards and he delivers this sumptuous offload back on the inside to O'Driscoll, who slides in. And again, like, that's the point where you just think this is them sliding into the quarterfinals. It's sort of 5 to 10 minutes into the second half, O'Driscoll slides in, and you feel like this is an iconic moment.
It's one of those passes, like you see Antoine Dupont for all the time, where it looks like it's flung wildly, but it's actually spot on, pinpoint accurate.
And it doesn't have to look fancy. You don't have to throw it out the back. Mm. Just throw a normal-looking pass while you're getting tackled, and trust me, it'll look good on the cameras.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's great. And O'Driscoll just times his run perfectly.
He does.
You know? Like, he starts making that run and timing it and pacing himself before Bo makes the break, anticipates perfectly, runs it in. Nick Mullins goes mad. It's great.
And for the next sort of 10, 15 minutes, Ireland are a joy to watch. They just completely switch it on and just go, like, right, let's just put him to the sword here.
See, I disagree because I'm really biased against Ireland.
Of course, of course. But there's a point where Gordon Darcy has this, like, 30-metre charge, roughly, where he just completely runs up Gonzalo Garcia's channel and bounces in and then just keeps going for absolute ages. But yeah, no, some great work where they go from one touchline to the next. And Bod delivers this lovely pass to Ferris, who does a little dummy and a nice offload for Keith Earls, who then scores straight afterwards. And you just think, right, two tries on the bounce. There's no coming back from this.
Yeah, it's a really nice offload by Ferris. Takes it really, really nicely. Not a part of his game you saw very often.
No.
Because you saw him being quick and big, but you didn't see him with hands, Mario.
Yeah.
Unless those hands were picking up Wilgenia.
Of course, yeah. that sort of offload that he does when he's sort of swinging from right to left, it's really hard to deliver that offload and make it still go backwards. And he does.
Yes.
Because on first angle, I looked at it and thought, oh, that must go forwards just because of the physics of the offload. But he does so well to make it go backwards.
Yeah, absolutely.
And again, he also closes width well and dots it down.
I want to have a moment to ponder the Gordon Darcy break because I think that there's only one possible explanation for why Darcy was able to make that break just on a centre as solid defensively in particular as Gonzalo Garcia missing that front of tackle. And that is, this is the only time I've seen Gonzalo Garcia completely clean shaven.
So
the power of his massive ginger beard is gone, and instead, Gordon Darcy, who of course played the best rugby of his life with a massive beard,
you know what I've just realised?
Burst the line.
Have we checked yet whether Gonzalo Garcia is some kind of like long distant relative, a friend of the pod, Graham Love?
It's possible. It's possible. Just anyone with a ginger beard is related.
It's the flamboyance of the ginger beard, because at his best, Gonzalo Garcia's ginger beard was fabulous.
Yeah, when he got recalled for the Italy team in about 2016, 17.
Yeah, and decided he wanted to kick long-range goals and missed them about five times a game.
Yes, of course. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I forgot I never Gonzalo Garcia, a long-range goal kicker. Me neither. I never
saw him get
one. What was that all about?
Yeah.
Why was there a period where we just decided, yes, we want Gonzalo Garcia to be a long-range goal kicker?
I don't know. He scored two penalties in international rugby.
Right.
And I don't know how many attempted, but I think it was a lot. Because I seem to remember him lining up loads and thinking, goal got here, good option, go for the long-range goal. And like I've said it to you quite a lot throughout the Six Nations, that I think Italy could do with a long-range goal kicker. I think that would be great if they had like a Reece Hodge or somebody like that. But at least make sure that they can actually kick it that distance first.
Yeah. Okay, I have Googled best ginger beards, right? Do you want to know who come up as the top five on the first article?
Go on.
So, no, take a guess. I'll give you five guesses. No, three guesses five or something.
Is one of them from like Harry Potter or something by any chance?
No.
Is one of them a pirate?
None of them are pirates. One of them is a historical figure.
Okay.
Four of them are living celebrities. One of which you would not expect to be on this list, but you will know who it is.
Is it friend of the pod, Graham Love?
It is not Graham Love.
Oh. I don't know. I give up.
This is by The Beard Mag. An American beard magazine. Conan O'Brien.
Okay.
Conan O'Brien. Michael C. Hall, who's the actor best known for playing Dexter in Dexter.
Right.
Michael Fassbender.
Okay.
The, you know, acclaimed Irish actor and now rally car driver. King Henry VIII.
Oh, okay.
And...
he was a shit.
Adam Kleeberger.
No!
Adam Kleeberger.
Seriously?
Yep.
We've just come across that, and that's just happened to be on there.
Yeah. Because I had a moment of just like, wait, is this a rugby article I opened? It's like, no, this is the first result when you type in best ginger beards.
That's insane.
Adam also, is a Canadian rugby player who had one of the most impressive ginger beards we have ever seen. An iconic beard which we are envious, should it say. In 2011, Adam shaved his beard for the charity Movember. We love how he's used his facial hair to raise awareness for a leading men's charity.
Oh, fair play. That's great that they've included Adam Kleeberger. Because, like, again, we've touched upon this in the Canadian leaving party, but, like, Kleeberger's beard was the talking point of the tournament for them.
Yes, absolutely. And, like, you look at Conan O'Brien's beard, right? It's fine. It's all right.
Sure.
Right. Kleeberger got in purely on the strength of his beard, not his achievements elsewhere.
Not his fame.
No. He is in there because he has the best beard.
Yeah.
Therefore, I think he wins.
I do think that they should have included a friend of the pod, Graham Love, but
that's just my opinion.
I think his beard is fantastic, but whatever. I mean, Adam Kleeberger is a fine person to lose out to, though, so fair play.
Sure.
He's representing the Squid Rugby World Cup retrospective in that list.
Yeah. No, that's a strong one. I clicked on another article, and number two was Emma Stone, and I realised it's just gingers rather than...
Oh, okay, not ginger beards.
Ginger beards.
Because her beard is nowhere near as impressive as Adam Kleeberger's.
I don't know. I think her husband, etc. Don't know if she's married. Don't know. I was going to go into thinking about the favourite there as well, but it's fine. Yeah. Let's move on.
Okay, so, rugby?
Rugby.
Okay, so I have written down here... Oh, yeah, there's one point where... So, Ireland have a line-out, and they throw the ball to Jamie Heaslip, who's at the tail. and mm-hmm. he is just beyond the 15-meter channel. And now, mm-hmm. let's test how good a flanker are you. If the ball is thrown beyond the 15-meter channel, what can you then do?
Rugby.
You can do rugby, exactly.
Yeah.
But the line-out's over, so you can stray offside.
But you can now do rugby, and, yes.
Yes, you can do rugby, rather than just watching. You can do rugby. So the ball's gone beyond the 15, the line-out's over. And you know what? This Italian pack, they're smart. They know this. So literally all of them leave the line-out post. And Heaslip returns to the floor and just gives the ball to Keane Healy, who just goes complete, like, straight through. And Andrea Marti's the only person there to tackle him and hauls him to the floor in the end. But I just found that really funny.
Healy does that thing that forwards do sometimes, right? Where you see them charging in that kind of wide angle we have on live coverage, right? And he begins to do a sidestep. And then the player he's trying to step comes into vision on the edge of the screen. And he goes, oh no, he stepped into them. He hasn't stepped to avoid them. He stepped to smash them.
He does that on this occasion, doesn't he? And you know what? Marti does brilliantly. And then I think it's on this passage of play that Rob Carney goes over the line and Marti holds him up again. So, fair play.
Andrea Marti it's a really difficult game to be a fullback, but he does a solid job.
Yeah, he does. However, there is one moment which I reckon I've already decided what clip from this game I'm going to use as part of the promo or I'm going to put on Twitter or whatever. And that involves Andrea Marti. So there's a point where Ireland kicked to him. And, I mean, I've just got written in my notes, Marti, what the fuck? Because there's a point where he catches the ball from a kick that Sexton's put up for him in the air. And he does a little goose step and then delivers this nice floated pass. Except he goose steps nobody. And he passes to nobody. Yeah. So he does this really like elaborately floated in the air pass that goes really far behind Benvenuti, who's trying to support him. And the thing is, the pass goes so badly that all the Italians are scurrying back. And just kind of by law of averages, one of them gets penalised for obstruction. And Sexton kicks the penalty over. And, you know, that's Ireland's sort of second to last points of the game.
Yeah.
It's such an awful piece of play by Marti. And, like, it's one of those where you're like a kid who's got the ball in the backyard and you're pretending you're stepping around everybody scoring Cheslin Kolbe's try in the World Cup final. Like, he's tried to do that. Right, I'm going to do a goose step, then I'm going to do this lovely pass. But it's like, no, none of that's worked. You picked the wrong moment.
The amazing thing is, because of how time works, actually Cheslin Kolbe was trying to recreate Andrea Marti doing that stepping no one.
Oh, and he accidentally scored in the World Cup final.
But he actually scored because he actually had people in front of him.
You see, that's
timing
smart.
Timing is tricky. That's smart. Wobbly.
Do that when there's people in front of you, you know? I like that.
He's onto something there, that Cheslin Kolbe, lad. You know, I think he goes places. Probably by running there really fast and beating people.
There's another point where Brian O'Driscoll tries this weird grubber kick type thing, and he just drops it onto his shin by accident, and it just goes really horribly. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, like, I don't quite think it's the right option, but I get what he's going for. But
I don't.
He completely shanks it onto his shin. And Keith Earls just completely like falls over and gets absolutely decked by the ball when he's trying to recover it. It goes really badly, and he gains about 5 yards, and Italy get the throw in.
It's the classic mark of a team who are two scores up and start throwing it about a bit too much.
Sure.
You know, like they're thinking maybe bonus point, but we're going to need to score a try really quickly to get there.
Yeah, yeah. But under brimming with confidence at this point, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Sean O'Brien did a handoff where he murdered Eduardo Gori as well.
And look, they deserve to have confidence because, you know, they've come through the pool really well. They beat Australia.
Yeah.
They've now put Italy to bed quite comfortably. And it was Italy that really fired up and really pushed them for about half an hour or so. And look, they're going to head into the World Quarterfinal next week. And they're obviously going to win easily, you know?
Yeah, you'd think.
Like, they're such heavy favourites. They should beat this Wales team who lost South Africa, right, who weren't very good in the Six Nations, took an illegal try to beat Ireland, right? This Wales team will be lucky if they come within two scores of them, you know?
Agreed.
Like, I think Ireland, obviously, they always do really well in quarterfinals, so it's going to be such an easy game the following week.
Yeah, exactly. So, look, they might as well just play with all the confidence in the world so they can prepare for this. And, of course, they bring off Brian O'Driscoll shortly after this as a sort of way of wrapping him in cotton wool and just saying, look, you know, we're going to look after our captain, make sure he's fit for the Wales game.
Get out of that, Brian. See what you can do. We're just going to trap you in this cotton wool.
Yeah.
Going to get you wet.
So, there's another point where Keane Healy's given the ball just in a normal standard forward pod and boots the ball 50 yards.
Yes. great kick as well.
Yeah, it's
like,
a really good kick.
I rewinded to check it wasn't O'Gara just stood in the forward pod.
Me too. I was thinking like, oh, you know, Sexton's come on and is playing a bit flat and has had a few burgers before the game, hasn't he? And no, it's a really good kick and like it's really unexpected.
We've never seen that from him again as well.
No.
Like he shows he's got, and like when you watch it on the replay, his form and the way he drops the ball and the way he shapes the kick is perfect.
It looks like he's pissing about on the first one, but actually it's a really smart kick. And I think it's something that teams are now ready for, the option of forwards doing that, because we've reached an age where forwards can kick, not that they necessarily do. But
we're going to see more of that in 5-10 years' time.
Yeah, yeah.
But you look at, we talked about in the last episode, Geoffrey Jenkins kicking. Geoffrey would kick quite a lot. But he wasn't a natural kicker, you know, like his shape was off. Keane Healy was spot on.
Yeah, it was a great like spiral kick. And it went genuinely about 50 yards.
Yeah.
Like, it was obviously the guy has huge legs. Like I wouldn't expect, you know, him to kick a tiny little piece of rubber any less. But still, it's great seeing prop forwards putting in like really good kicks. And there is this narrative that I hate where people, when like a front row forward does a good bit of skill and everyone's like, oh, you're ditching the front row union there. It's like, no, like forwards have good skills now, you know, get with it. Yeah,
they have to have.
But yeah, no, it's always great to see stuff like that.
Mm. No, absolutely. Absolutely. We've covered everything in my notes now.
Okay, well,
I have nothing left. Though I suppose Kiefer scores another try, doesn't he?
He does. There's a point where I wrote Italy do bad attack. But I don't really know.
That
what
could
that's
be any point
to,
in the game.
Because there was a lot of that, so it's quite vague.
Mm.
But yeah, no. And there's another point where Tommy Bowe does this grubber kick down the sideline. And he's pretty unlucky not to finish it, mainly because he's tackled off the ball and slid in the wrong direction. So it probably should be a penalty try. So Bowe's kind of robbed of two tries in this game. But it's nearly a brilliant finish. And I want to call it a good finish, despite the fact he doesn't actually get the 5 points. But he manages to go, you know, 70-odd yards just towing the ball along the floor.
Yeah, yeah.
And he does so well to get as close as he actually does. But, yeah, it's not long after that that...
And it's, again, it has that thing with the TMO that he can't step in and say... Because Benvenuti shoves him off, no, before the try line.
Yeah.
The TMO then can't say, yeah, he was pulled back. This is a penalty try.
You know what I'm realising in this World Cup? Benvenuti's a low-key shithouse, isn't he?
He is. It's weird, isn't it? Like, none of us saw this one coming.
Like, there was the game against Australia where he just decided, nah, I don't want any of that, and avoided Rocky Elsom and just stepped out of the way of him, drifting, in inverted commas. And then this one where he just goes, right, well, I'll push him over.
Yeah.
And there's been a few moments of Benvenuti doing things that, where you think, ah, you're just dancing with the devil here. And there's
even
the game
just
against
taking
Russia
the kick
just,
in.
Yeah, where he just decided, no. I am the kicker now, you know?
It's like, have you ever kicked before, Tommaso? He's like, no, but I bet I could do it, you know?
Yeah.
Looks dead easy.
Yeah, just big dick confidence. Yeah, low-key shithouse. I'm not really realised that until now, but yeah. But no, last play of the game, Andrew Trimble makes a nice break where he sort of dances around one player and he times the pass perfectly to Keith Earls, who scores the second try of the corner. And again, I really like Earls' like real theatrical dive into the corner as he scores it. And it just feels like, right, this is it. All the hard work, we're out of the group now. Now we've just got to carry on to the quarterfinal, which we should win.
Nick Mullins has also found out an important bit of information between the first and second try.
Oh, go on.
For Keith Earls.
Oh, yes.
And so when he crosses, he shouts, "Happy birthday, Keith Earls!" Because this game was on Earls' birthday.
Yeah.
And he clearly forgot that on the first try. Second try, he made amends. Yeah. And made a big deal out of it, as he should.
Yeah. So, happy birthday, Keith Earls.
Yeah.
Happy, what would you have been?
Well, there's an extra...
birthday?
Keith Earls was only 24, man. Look at that. There was an extra ring in the onion there.
I don't get it.
Oh, because I once said he has a face like a haunted onion.
Ah.
And I've seen people since refer to him as the onion.
Nice. That's a good nickname for him.
As an onion.
He should just be called Onion.
Yeah. Which is the name of a great monkey that I have.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not going to be explained. So, with that, we come through to the end of this game.
Yes.
And to our man of the match and our dick of the D.
So,
should we start with dick of the day?
Yeah. My dick of the day, I mean, obviously Golden Hayes is in contention for that pass along the floor, which didn't go quite as planned. But, and also, at the start of the game, Jonathan Kaplan, who was refereeing, does some weird salute to the crowd, and I quite...
Is it a Nazi salute?
Yeah, to be fair, it does kind of look like it. But it's...
Because we know his political leanings.
Yeah, of course. But yeah, he does some weird gesture before the game, and I can't quite figure it out. But frankly, Dick of the day is obviously Mauro Bergamasco for twatting his opposite man when they're about to score. Like, what so, are you doing? I just can't get my head around it.
It's another game really rich in Dick of the Day contenders, pretty much all of them for Italy. Gelden Hayes, as you mentioned, for throwing the pass to the floor.
Yeah.
You have, there's a moment quite early on, quite soon after that, where Tommy Bowe wraps around really nicely and he runs. It's this move that you think nowadays he'd have someone off his shoulder, he'd do the pop ball. And I was kind of viewing it in slow motion, imagining what would happen nowadays if it was like George Ford or someone wrapping around.
Sure.
Or Garbisi, Paolo Garbisi, the best player of all time, wrapping around and giving that little pass. And then Tommy Bowe throws the pass despite there's no one running off him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and Mirko Bergamasco
just drops it, doesn't he?
Yeah. And he tries to...
It's really
like
bad.
He's thrown an intercept cleanly with no one near him.
Like, he's thrown a really crisp pass. It should go the whole way.
And Bergamasco fumbles it forward, then takes it anyway, gets really angry with nothing because he's Mirko Bergamasco, screams at everyone, does his hair up, and then goes back and sets up the
And he
scrum.
Boots the ball away as well, in frustration.
Of course he does.
Oh, so that was a really dickish moment, isn't it?
Because both Tommy Bowe and Mirko Bergamasco really share there, you know?
Yeah. Are you giving yours to Mirko Bergamasco?
No, I'm not.
Oh,
right.
So it's not the two brothers together?
Because they could have been the two of them. The two of them, you know, Mauro
Bergamasco.
As poetic
as that would have been.
However, my dick of the day... So I was considering... But this was before Mauro Bergamasco's. But even before the interview we got onto, Leonardo Gherardini took a lead for being dick of the day.
Okay.
So Italy have two really good mauls in the first half, right? The second one is ruined by Mauro Bergamasco just thumping someone.
Yeah.
But the first is ruined because Leonardo Gherardini at the back... As they're crossing the try line, he drops in order to ground the ball a yard early.
Right.
And so blows the try because he drops short of the line. And then they go back for the penalty and then they blow it from there.
Yeah.
They do crossing the line out or something. Ireland clear. And then moments later, he gouges someone.
Yeah, that's
so
pretty dickish.
That is a minute of ruining a try for your own team when all your fellow teammates have done the work for you and got you over the line. All you've got to do is put it down. And so he doesn't do that. He doesn't wait half a second, it would be, to drop over the line. And then gouging someone, that makes...
Pretty
getting away with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes you my dick of the day.
I think that's
so
entirely
I think that's my
justified.
Second Leonardo Gherardini dick of the day.
You see, this is the second time I've given Mauro Bergamasco dick of the day as well.
Oh.
Because, of course, he wore the branded shorts that one time.
Yes.
And with that, we say, arrivederci to the Italians.
This is Che Gilda Manina by Carlo Bergazzoni.
Ah, nice.
A bit of Italian opera for you.
Yeah, thank you. Yes. I like that. So, Italy, they finished third in their pool.
Which makes a real change for them, doesn't it? It's a real upset for the books, that one. I really feel for the fact they've got to play New Zealand and France in their pool next time because they've got a good team building, but they're just going, it's third again, is it, lads?
Yeah. Like, this is a real strong third. We're going to finish a record top third, you know, this time. But, no, yeah, Italy, I mean, especially in the games against the USA and Russia, they were such great value for money. I mean, against Russia, Benvenuti was one man who really stood out. I mean, frankly, the two players who, for me, have been their two sort of star players in this tournament have been Parise and Castro. And I think it's one of those things of great players playing very well in World Cups is always great to see. And I really enjoyed watching those two sort of at the peak of their powers.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. I also think it's worth mentioning their game against Australia from early on in the tournament.
Yes.
Where they were not on top, but they were really level with the Wallabies.
Yeah, Semenzato.
Until half-time. Until directly before half-time. As you say, Semenzato, had the real stand-up game.
Yeah.
But as you say, Castro and Parise, excellent. Gherardini and Perugini as well. Both excellent when they weren't gouging or being dick of the day twice. Perugini, I thought, was great, other than when he had to move to tight head, which was really harsh on him.
Of course, Bless.
And, you know, obviously we see the following season after this, the Premiership changes that, so you have two props on the bench.
Yeah.
And that kind of phases out. I think there's some of the backs that were really solid as well, though. You know,
Andrea Marzi had a good tournament, I think.
Andrea Marzi had a good tournament off the back of his, you know, standout Six Nations the year before.
Yeah.
And, like... Mirko Bergamasco is always Mirko Bergamasco, you know? And if you want a pointlessly angry winger, he's going to do you a magnificent job.
Yeah, that's fair. I wouldn't describe the way he played necessarily as good in this tournament.
No.
But I certainly found him entertaining.
isn't it? Yeah, exactly. You always enjoy watching him because you know the player.
You always notice
him. Yes.
You never come off going, which player's Bergamasco? or if you do, it's because there's two of them.
And it's the thing I've always said, you know, like rugby needs more personalities like that, right?
Yeah.
And I miss Mirko Bergamasco. I miss the really angry winger who starts the fight with everyone.
The token dickhead in the Italy
everything.
Team. Like,
exactly.
I know it's now Jake Pellegrini, but like,
face,
it's not the same.
But
like, he's an actual shithouse.
How distinctive he was as well,
yeah.
You know, to look at. And the fact that he took the goal kicking?
Yeah.
The fact that, you
he
know,
was that cynical.
Famously, no one else wanted to do it. And he went, all right, I'll have it. You know, I'll take the shot at goal. And ended up with a kicking. Ended up kicking one of the most famous kicks in Italian rugby history against France to win it. But I'm a huge fan of him. I remember Jiffy saying once during the Six Nations that most goal kickers are really cool, calm, collected characters. You know, the Johnny Wilkinsons of the world, or Lee Harpenk,
sure.
or someone who, you know. Whereas Bergamasco is so fiery and over the top that he just like, hits the ball like he hates it.
Yeah.
I'm not just talking about Mirko Bergamasco. But yeah, I think Castro, Gherardini, Perugini, Parise, standouts. Parise had a bit of the ego that would later go on to define him coming through at this point already.
Yeah. And if I was to finally pick a dick of the tournament for Italy, it would go as a joint to the Bergamasco brothers.
Yes. I mean, you can't see them and not give it to them,
yeah.
you know? Like, just to share, just have something to take home with them.
I've just noticed we didn't pick a man of the match.
Did we not? Oh, yeah, no. Of course we didn't.
So I'll quickly say, I think Tommy Bowe was brilliant, but for me, there's two contenders. One of them is Kian Healy. And I'm going to give it to Sean O'Brien because I think he carried everything and always made yardage, made some real dominant hits, and he was just everywhere.
I had largely the same kind of Tommy Bowes, who plays really well. O'Driscoll has a few really nice touches.
Yeah.
I think Conor Murray was very good.
Yeah.
Conor Murray was well in contention for me, but it's Kian Healy.
Yeah,
I am
that's fair.
Giving it to
I'm really
Mr.
glad
Kian
you
Healy.
Gave it to him because, like, there is a part of me that thinks it what Healy was the better of the two, but
yeah.
I don't know. So I'm glad that we've each given him a vote.
Yeah, so we've split the vote there. Okay, cool. That is decided.
Yeah.
And that brings us to the end of the pool stages.
That's mental, isn't it? So
it's
we've
mad.
Done 40 episodes of this now, so we only have left the quarterfinals.
Yep.
Yeah, thoughts on the pool stage, everything, you know, talk to me.
So we have our lineups of quarterfinals.
Yeah, of course.
We have Ireland and Australia go through from that pool. So if we start there, Ireland obviously... I think Australia looked like the best team in this pool,
yeah.
but they very much came out second best in the encounter between the two teams.
Yes.
To accidentally get a job on the BBC Scrum Pie podcast for a moment. The then have, from the next pool, we have England qualifying in first, and we
somehow.
Have Argentina qualifying in second,
yeah.
Which is, that's such a weird pool, because I don't think any of the three teams in contention were that good.
Yeah, that Argentina team felt like... The thing is, part of me felt like they scraped through. Obviously, they did.
Yeah.
They got quite lucky to beat Scotland with that Amorosino try. And Scotland really, really felt disappointed to not get through that
pool.
The annoying thing is, more than anything, they're going to infect the rest of the tournament with the bad goal kicking.
Yes, that's the worry, isn't it? That pool, I'm just glad is done, because it was such a wretched, awful thing. And none of the teams in it were any good at all.
No. No.
They were all bad.
Yeah.
Like, and it was, by Romania standards in a lot of tournaments, that was solid for them, you know?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But
no, it was, that was a difficult pool.
Yeah.
So yeah, next pool was...
So we then have, I mean, I've done them out of order, but New Zealand and France qualifying.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue with, even though France lost to Tonga, so they clearly, they won't go very far, will they? Playing at
France would just hat stand, you know? They were just completely all over the place.
Bonkers.
And no one quite knew what to make of them at any given point.
Yeah.
And in that way, as we're looking at it from here, you have no idea what to expect of them in the quarterfinals.
No. No.
But you also know England are a bit rubbish and massively overrated, so they could battle them.
So England are playing France in the quarterfinals.
Yes.
That's, at the time, I remember thinking that was a really tough one to call. I think being pessimistic, I expected England to win, but I was hoping France would.
Hmm.
So the final pool?
We then have South Africa qualifying on top, with Wales in second.
Yeah. So South Africa play Australia in the quarterfinals.
Yes.
In which I was thinking South Africa would win.
That looks like the least controversial quarterfinal of them all.
Yeah,
and
agreed.
The one we're least likely to be talking about in 10 years' time.
Agreed.
When someone's doing a podcast on this.
Yeah, yeah, I think I agree.
Can you imagine if someone does the Squidge Rugby World Cup retrospective?
We've discussed this, man. Let's do it. Okay. Yeah. We'll do a commentary episode where we look at the first episode on New Zealand against Tonga, and we'll just talk about us and how bad we were at the start.
It can be like our... We can remember the jokes about Can't Believe It's Not Butter, and we can deconstruct my story about deconstructing a joke about Can't Believe It's Not Butter.
That would be so funny.
It would be so funny. South Africa, clearly the best team in that pool. You know, absolutely battered Namibia and absolutely battered Fiji.
Yeah.
And the Samoa game was far closer, but the Samoa game against Wales was closer still.
Hmm. Yeah, so... I mean, Wales have are starting to win the hearts of the fans of this tournament. But So Wales play Ireland. Ireland famously great in quarterfinals. So, you know, they'll go into this feeling optimistic. I mean, to be honest, I remember going into this game thinking... I wasn't too optimistic. I remember thinking, like, Wales are good, but I think getting to the semi-finals is a bit too far. So, yeah, we'll report back on that and how that goes.
Look, based on everything we've seen so far, Ireland should absolutely batter them, you know?
Yeah.
Shouldn't even be a contest, really. It would just be complete runaway success for Ireland.
Yeah.
I obviously hate them more than anything, so because I'm massively biased against them.
Yeah.
But I do think they should win easily, which is what the media was telling me at the time. Yeah. And was saying, this is Ireland's year. Yeah. You know, they're gonna go not necessarily all the way, but they're gonna go really far.
Yeah.
And really, really push the All Blacks, perhaps.
And so the final quarterfinal is the All Blacks against Argentina.
Yes.
So, as I say, Argentina just about worthy for their spot in the quarterfinals with the Amorosino try. And, I mean... I'm looking forward to seeing Amorosino inevitably starting above Rodriguez and dancing around the entire All Black team. But no,
that'd be fun.
The All Blacks obviously kind of coasted through that pool. So this is, I mean, the France game in theory was a big test, but they coasted through that. So this is the first big test for them. You know, physically, that Argentine pack is going to give them a bit of hassle.
Like, it's going to take them at least a long time to break them down in the way France were the complete opposite and were terrible and then suddenly woke up right towards the end.
Yeah. But obviously, you can never write off the All Blacks, even with Dan Carter out injured.
Yeah, which is... I still can't believe that. You know, I never saw that one coming.
No, me neither.
Not now, not then, never, never, no. Never.
Never will.
So, who are you predicting, right? So, we're saying Ireland will beat Wales and easily go through.
Yeah. England or France? Okay. England or France? England, narrowly.
South Africa
will beat Australia, narrowly.
I think this is a good Australia team, though.
It is a good... It's a great Australia backline.
But I think quite fancy Australia.
This South Africa
depends
team...
on the type of game.
I think they know how to win games
for Springboks. Right? If it's low scoring, if it's something like, I don't know, like 9-11 or something, you know, if it's something quite tight, then 9-11's unfortunate, isn't it? Then I reckon South Africa would win it. But I can see it usually being a higher scoring game than Australia winning. So I'm going to say Australia in a high scoring fixture.
Okay, I'm going South Africa.
Okay.
And finally, we have New Zealand Argentina. How do you see that one going?
The All Blacks will win that. That's fine. Like, you reckon? Argentina, okay. I reckon, will probably score like an early try, maybe through like Cabezas or something. And then from there,
you're giving too many spoilers away for things that might happen in the future. But
well,
anyway.
How would I know them? I don't know anything that happened in the future.
Exactly.
So we're saying, right, Ireland. England, you're saying South Africa, I'm saying Australia.
Yeah.
And the All Blacks will go through.
Why did I say the All Blacks? Then,
okay, do you think Argentina will win?
Yeah.
Okay. But see, no, I think the All Blacks will beat Australia, South Africa in the semi-final anyway.
Okay.
And then Ireland will play England in the semi-final. And England are really good, but Ireland... Well, Ireland have never lost a semi-final. So I think they'll win
that. Well, yeah. Something I just remembered about is that, do you remember on Facebook there used to be this thing where you could do like notes?
Yeah.
I can remember at this point in the tournament, I was 14 years old, I just wrote in there like my predictions for the whole, like the quarterfinals.
Can we get it up?
Facebook notes no longer exist. I have looked for this in past.
Oh, man.
But I'm pretty sure.
Oh, no.
I'm pretty sure I predicted Wales to win in extra time against Ireland.
I'm going to look up if there's a way to get old Facebook notes. Come on.
Okay.
Come on. Don't let us down. Click on activity log.
Okay. Activity log. Got it. Start date 2011. Okay.
Have we got it?
Hang on. I'm going to do my best to find it. So this was what? September, October 2011.
Yeah.
I voted in Rugby World Cup's poll.
Okay.
To say Richie Gray was my second row of the tournament.
Nice.
Oh, Christ. I used Facebook a lot in 2011.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah. I found myself commenting on people's status, telling them to support Wales.
Oh, that's wholesome.
Yeah. I voted in Rugby World Cup's poll saying I thought Wales were going to win.
The World Cup?
No, the quarterfinal.
Against Ireland. Okay.
So I did actually think, okay, no, the note is unavailable.
Oh, that's a huge shame.
Yeah.
Zuckerberg, this is the worst thing you've ever done.
Yeah. There is a chance that I just deleted it a few years later, of course.
That's boring.
Yeah. Never mind, eh? But yeah,
okay.
That did happen though. And I, as I say, I predicted Wales to win on penalties, I think, or something like that. So yeah, that may or may not have happened, but there's only one way to find out. You can't Google it. You have to tune into this podcast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Speaking of things you have to tune into this podcast for, of notes to be read out. So we asked some episodes ago for Deacon Manu fan fiction.
Whoa! Okay.
Okay. I then, last week, received a tweet. I apologise, I've lost their Twitter handle.
Okay.
But they are listed. This is on Archive of Our Own, which is a fanfiction website. They are on here as Nothing Was Simple.
Okay.
They have also written Game of Thrones fanfiction.
Okay.
They have written some before and after
this.
Mostly Game of Thrones fanfiction, looking for the profile.
But they're experienced. They know what they're doing, so I'm expecting some high quality stuff.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I'm about to get Deacon Manu fanfiction. I can't wait for this.
They've written a lot of their fanfiction, their sort of Game of Thrones fanfiction or so on, is some of it is like north of 22,000 words long.
Right.
So it's long. This is not as long.
Okay.
But it's called Rain Falls in Clonmacnoise.
Okay.
Like Nothing Was Simple.
Okay.
I want to begin by adding the note that this says this work could contain adult content.
Okay, thank you.
If you proceed, you will have agreed to such a content warning.
Okay, thank you for the heads up.
Tags include Deacon Manu, the stat sheet. The shipping is listed as Deacon Manu / the stat sheet. The other tags, Four Squid Rugby, I regret this deeply. Freeform, not proofread, because I'm not spending any longer than 20 minutes on this. 20 minutes was far too long.
Respect.
I'm truly sorry. The description of it then reads, this is for the Squid Rugby podcast. You asked for it, Robbie. You have only yourself to blame. I would like to add,
yeah, you
my
can't
brother
blame me.
Is also to blame.
Yeah.
It's a joint blame situation.
Okay.
So. Rain falls in Clonmacnoise. Nothing was simple. South Wales was cold and wet and lonely. Rain fell in the sheets as he drove home from the Parker Scarlets. Shop front lights blurred in the ever-falling droplets. Every part of him ached from training, and he wondered why he even tried. Deep down, he knew. Waiting at home as fresh fallen snow with perfectly highlighted features, she was waiting for him. Spread out on the kitchen table or lying on the bed. It always comes back to her, doesn't it? The stat sheet. He had been underperforming for months. He knew it. The coaching staff knew it. But it was the stat sheet who really drove the point home. Theirs had not been a happy union. Since his form had begun to dip towards the end of the previous season, every time he ran out in front of the Clonmacnoise crowd, he knew that it wasn't the fans or even the head coach, who was Nigel Davis at the time, by the way, he wanted to impress. It was her. It harmed his game, going for meters made rather than effective carries, only tackling people he knew he could take. But the allure of positive stats was too much to resist. No. He had to end it now, before it got too late, before his contract was cut and his career ended. He would break up with her tonight. He had to.
No.
He couldn't. What motivation would he find with her no longer in his life? How could he continue to drag himself onto the pitch? He was getting old now, over 30. A fossil, Wales Online had recently called him. Every time he went online after a match, calls for him to be dropped were levelled at the club.
Oh,
retiring
God,
was an option. But what to do next? Punditry? He lacked the charisma. Coaching? required too much thought.
He had a great career coaching Hong Kong Scottish, I'll have you know, but whatever, carry on.
Don't you say that about his charisma. He pulled into the driveway and sat in his car, thinking about what his future may hold. I can decide later, he lied to himself. She called to him as he took off his dripping wet coat. A little birdie told me you made 23 tackles at training today. At that moment, Deacon Manu knew he was doomed. Like a fly in a spider's web, he would never be free. The end.
That's incredible. And like, it's so good that like, I genuinely had a point where I was like, no, Deacon, you can't break up with her. And then there was a point towards the end where before the whole thing about you made 23 tags in training, I forgot that it was a statute we weren't talking about, not a woman. I forgot we were talking
Deacon
about
Deacon Manu, it is the same thing. Yeah. There's a comment from Harlequin87 who says, this is horrifying, brackets, I love it. To which Nothing Was Simple replied, it is horrifying, brackets, I don't love it.
Fair enough. Oh man, that's incredible. Nothing Was Simple. That's so good. I enjoyed that, and only 97% ironically.
I want to say, yeah, enormous thank you. And
that's incredible. I love that.
Enormous
that's
kudos
such great,
for that.
Great engagement, that. And
29 people have read it before me.
That's incredible.
So I'm two of them. So there's 27 other people who probably love his Game of Thrones fan fiction and are really confused.
Yeah, about what podcast he's listening to that leads to whatever that was.
Yeah.
But also, I had a notification earlier about somebody else replying to the Chad Plato thing, tagging that zebra rugby.
Oh, nice.
So,
nice.
Keep going, lads. He's going to start someday soon. But yeah, no, that's incredible. Thank you so much. Nothing Was Simple. That's such, as I say, I'm in awe.
There is no better way to round out the pool stage, I believe.
Yeah, I agree. So we'll see you after the Six Nations finishes for the first quarterfinal, which is Ireland against Wales.
Ireland against Wales, first quarterfinal. Okay. Yeah, we'll come
very
back
excited.
After Six Nations.
Yeah.
I'm afraid, yeah, I'm going to be working a lot to try and fill that, so we won't have time to watch the game and do it justice on here.
Yeah.
Which, not something we've done at all anyway, but
no.
I haven't. But yes, so we'll return then. In the meantime, thank you to everyone that's listened. Thank you to everyone that has contributed, be it with fan fiction or otherwise. And we will see you very soon for Ireland. Not that soon, but pretty soon. For Ireland against Gales.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.